Hello, friends, and welcome to our continuation of our third initiation discussion. Actually, I'm doing this as a continuation for the Blue Rose Sisterhood. But as I said earlier, it looks like the kind of thing that everyone will be able to take advantage of. So, before long, I'll send you my comments on this compilation. Now, we've been going through various compilations that I've assembled, or various paragraphs in this abbreviated compilation. There's a longer compilation for the third initiation, and I do hope that I will be able to do all the initiations in this way. So here we are at this paragraph 21, and this is actually, I did this almost 2 weeks ago, so this is the 29th of August, and I was able to do this approximately 2 weeks ago. So here is the discussion of a rather obscure matter, the function of the three Kumaras, or the three Buddhas of activity. They're actually, of course, seven Kumaras in terms of our planetary life, and the foremost Kumara is Sanat Kumara. Now, if the three Buddhas of activity, which are also known as the three Kumaras rather than the three esoteric Kumaras, if they were planetary logoi in the previous solar system, then maybe we can wonder what was the nature of the other three Kumaras in the previous solar system, the esoteric Kumaras. There's some kind of revolution of those beings. In other words, Buddhas of activity can become esoteric Kumaras, and esoteric Kumaras can become Buddhas of activity. And of course, each one of those six, the three esoteric and the three Buddhas of activity, three exoteric Kumaras, they might be called, have connection with the extraplanetary Kumaras. In other words, we would call Venus a great Kumara, we would call the Logos of Jupiter a great Kumara, and so forth. So the lesser beings on our planet, they're still great as far as we're concerned, who are called the esoteric Kumaras and the exoteric Kumaras, or Buddhas of activity, have connection with still greater Kumaras in our solar system. So the function of the three Buddhas of activity at initiation is interesting, he says. There are three aspects of the one aspect, and the pupils of Sanat Kumara, they are under the law of sacrifice, we're told. The law of sacrifice. Under the law of sacrifice, and their progress has been somewhat held back because of this sacrifice that they're making, but they were planetary logoi, and here they are cooperating with the planetary logos of our particular planet. So certainly the degree of humility or proportion is very great. Though their functions are many and varied, and certainly far beyond our comprehension, and concern primarily the forces and energies of nature. Why? Because they are all ruled essentially by the third ray of creative intelligence, which is also the green ray of nature. So they concern primarily the forces and energies of nature and the direction of the building agencies. Okay. They have a vital connection with the applicant for initiation inasmuch as they each embody the force or energy of one or other of the three higher subplanes of the mental plane. This is a fascinating idea. So the third, second, and first subplanes somehow are connected with these three Buddhas who inform these three higher subplanes. That's something that I had somehow forgotten along the way. Therefore, at the third initiation, one of these kumaras transmits to the causal body of the initiate that energy which is, destroys third subplane matter. That's at the third initiation, and thus brings about the part of the destruction of the vehicle. And you know, at this point, intuition begins to take over. At the fourth initiation, another Buddha transmits second plane force, does this totally destroy the causal body, or is there still some destruction and dissipation to pass through? And at the first subplane force, which is, let us remember, a triadal force, is similarly passed into the remaining atoms of the causal vehicle. So really, no final liberation from the causal vehicle. Why don't I make that a CV? Vehicle. So no final liberation from the causal vehicle until the fifth initiation. And that's, you know, sometimes we talk about the causal being vehicle being destroyed at the fourth initiation. Well, from the functional point of view, I suppose it is destroyed, but from the dissipatory, if I can use a word like that, point of view, or dissipated point of view, it is not entirely destroyed. So there are remaining atoms. And I assume that there is a great dissipation that occurs at that point. So that's something we have to remember when we so often repeat the idea that the causal body is destroyed at the fourth initiation. Destroyed, yes, but thoroughly dissipated so that the revelation can occur? No. The work done by the second Kumara with second subplane force is in this solar system the most important in connection with the egoic body and produces its complete dissipation. Aha. Well, that's a kind of contradicts what I just said. But okay. But there's still there are remaining atoms. So let's take a look at that. Whereas the final application causes the atoms, yes, themselves to disperse. So I guess both are correct. The dissipation of the form of the causal body occurs at the fourth initiation, but still atoms remain. And the final term is called dispersal. Okay, so maybe dissipation occurs at the fourth, but not what DK calls the final dispersal. Okay, final dispersal at the fifth initiation, and dissipation of the form of the causal causal vehicle, causal body at the fourth initiation. Okay. All right. So I hope that's clear. And one day we will all pass through that process as we fulfill the ancient mantram, lead us from the individual to the universal. I suppose there's no such thing as appreciated universality in any accurate sense until the fifth initiation is passed through. I mean, there's a growing sense of it, of course, as we go along, and the fourth initiation can be taken in Aquarius, which is a sign of universality, and the fifth initiation is often taken in Aquarius rather than Pisces leading to Shambhala. So universality, the sense of it, is growing and growing, but I'm sure that at the fifth initiation, with the revelation of the purpose of deity, of our planetary logos, and of the seven of the seven or nine cosmic paths, a much greater sense of universality comes in. Now, wouldn't you know it, I haven't started my watch. So let's see if I can. Yeah. All right. Let's see if that will work. Well, let's just say I've started the stopwatch, but there's no guarantee that this program will come out to be an hour in duration. It would be nice, but I don't think it's necessarily going to happen. Anyway, it'll probably be a long time before these programs are broadcast on prime time TV, or maybe by that time it'll be prime time telepathy. So I won't be too concerned if I run over by a few minutes or fall short by a few minutes. I think the important thing is getting the word out. All right. So let's continue. At the third initiation, the ego stands before the initiate as a perfected triplicity. Now, remember that at the first initiation, it's the knowledge petals that are seen, and at the second, the knowledge and love petals. And here we have as well the sacrifice petals at the third initiation. And one, there's some opening of the synthesis petals by that time, though not a complete bursting open as we find just before the completion of the fourth initiation. Not only is the self known to be intelligent, active love, okay, which can be accessed increasingly deliberately, but it is revealed also as fundamental will or purpose, you know, coming through the sacrifice petals and through the synthesis petal that's appropriate, and through the jewel and the lotus, with which the man immediately identifies himself. You know, would that we could, if only we could do that more often and in our daily process, and knows that the three worlds hold for him in the future naught. That's what he says about moonchain humanity, especially that they are less oriented towards the lower 18 subplanes, or maybe what he says is not so much about moonchain humanity as it is about disciples and aspirants, that they look at the lower 18 subplanes as the field for service rather than some area of real interest. So he identifies immediately with this fundamental will or purpose, you know, to make our planet a sacred lighted sphere, a station of light, and an actively functioning base of the spine center in the solar system. You know, we hold, in a way, on our planet, a very high and important initiatory function, because there's not going to be any fourth initiation, and especially fifth initiation for our solar logos, unless our planet is monadically up to the task with its first ray monad, kind of relating it to Pluto and Pluto's first ray and rulership in man of the base of the spine center. Okay, but fundamental will or purpose with which the man is immediately identifies himself and knows that the three worlds hold for him in the future naught, but only serve as a sphere of active service. Well, if we could develop that attitude, we would be in a good position, wrought out in love towards the accomplishment of a purpose. See, active service, third ray, wrought out in love, second ray, towards the accomplishment of a purpose, first ray, which has been hid during the ages in the heart of the self, we might say hid in the monad or in the projection of the monad called the jewel in the lotus. That purpose being now revealed can be intelligently cooperated with and thus matured. Well, the purpose will have something to do with light and with a great redemptive activity. I think, sometimes it's been said our planet is the hospital of the of all the planetary logoi and all the planetary schemes. So we have, I think, a redemptive mission with respect to the processes that were going on the moon chain, and even with respect to the processes related to the previous solar system, which is the first of the major solar systems. At the third initiation, there is revealed, now we're going on, at the third initiation, wonderful book, isn't it? I mean, Initiation Human and Solar shouldn't be called his. That's the trouble. It should be called Space. And now we'll get it. Okay. Otherwise, it'll correct me to his instead of IHS. So anyway, okay, got my little Chihuahua dog here, right? His name is Arrow Nouoli. Yeah, that's the Finnish word for arrow, and sometimes he seems to jump off the ground vertically and just keep going. So anyway, at the third initiation, there is revealed to the initiate the purpose of the subray, of the ray to which he belongs. Now, notice he really belongs. His real home is the monadic ray. So this subray is that upon which his ego finds itself. And so, let's just say, a lot about egoic purpose comes through at the third initiation. But not the full thing, because in a way, even at the fifth initiation, the ray of the ego is still active, because essentially it's one of the rays of the triad, and the triad is certainly still very active. All egoic units are upon some subray of the monadic ray. When it says some, it doesn't only mean one, two, or three. It probably includes seven. This subray bears upon, well, there are seven soul rays after all, aren't there? So there's going to be seven subrays of the monad, and the monad itself, in one of its areas of expression, has seven rays. So I think, let's just look at that for a moment. Okay, so let's say we were looking at this picture, and basically what you see is that on the monadic plane there are seven of these triangles, indicating, among other things, that the monad has seven rays. But the three superior rays of the monad, as far as I can see, would be the first, second, and third, and they would be relating to logoic centers. So basically what we've got here, we've got seven subrays of seven types of monad, seven subrays of seven types of monad. Okay. Right. So this knowledge is conferred. All egoic units are found on some subray of the monadic ray, which is, in my view, only first, second, or third when we relate to the liberated monad of the logoic plane, but really can be any one of the seven. This knowledge is conferred upon the initiate so as to enable him eventually to find for himself, along the line of least resistance, the ray of the monad. So let's just say, if we know the ray of the subray of the monad, it is easier to find our, oh no, monadic ray. Okay. This subray bears upon its stream of energy many groups of egos. Okay, so let's just say we're dealing with the second subray upon which maybe many of us who are students of DK find ourselves. Well, there are many groups of second ray egos, many groups. And the initiate is therefore made aware not only of his egoic group and its intelligent purpose, according, I suppose, to the will and purpose of the master who functions in a way as a monad to his ashram, but of many other groups similarly composed. Their united energy is working towards a clearly defined goal, and we can't know all this until a certain point in our unfoldment. All right. The secrets as imparted, let's see. Hopefully, yes, I'm running. The secrets as imparted sequentially to the initiate, there's another paragraph, are roughly three in number, through which, though within them there are found many lesser mysteries which are earlier revealed. Well, why should there be secrets to initiation? Well, why do you not hand a hand grenade to a child, We have to know the consequences of our acts and be in line with the plan before we can handle the superior forces. At the third initiation, the first of the three fundamental secrets of the solar system, because why? Because the third initiation is the first solar initiation. The first of three fundamental secrets of the solar system is imparted to the initiate immediately after he has taken the oath, and let's just say the oath is a great protection because it alerts the individual passing through initiation to how serious the whole process really is, and he has committed his will towards guarding the secrets of initiation. Okay, it would be wise here for the student to remember that the three planes of the three worlds, physical, astral, and mental, form the dense physical body of the solar logos. So I guess, whilst the four higher form his etheric body. So there's the answer. I've often been looking for that answer, and I've been wondering whether, the dense physical body of the solar logos is formed by 21 subplanes and the dense physical body of the planetary logos by 18 subplanes. But here he seems to say the entire 21 subplanes. Here the entire 21 subplanes are said to form the dense physical body of the solar logos. Okay. But when you reason about it, it just seems that the dense physical body of the solar logos, with its 21 subplanes, should be somehow differentiated from the dense physical body of the planetary logos, and that would put the three higher subplanes in kind of a ambiguous position. Anyway, we'll take DK at his word here. It would be wise here for the student to remember that the three planes of the three worlds, physical, astral, and mental, form the dense physical body of the solar logos, whilst the four higher form his etheric body. Well, maybe he's not really talking so much about the planetary logos. I may have wandered off there a little bit. And maybe the dense physical body of the planetary logos really is the lower 18 subplanes. All right, we're looking for confirmation on this. As I said, it stands to reason that it would be so, but with the causal body in kind of an intermediate position. Students are apt to forget that our seven planes are the seven subplanes of the cosmic physical. Well, maybe DK reminds us often enough so that we're not going to forget that too easily. This has a very definite bearing on the secret of electricity. And I want to just say much to be Okay. Much to be revealed during the fifth ray, age of Aquarius. This is why the secret is not revealed until the third initiation, and I must say again, ruled by the fifth ray, and is prepared for by the impartation of two lesser secrets which concern the physical and astral planes, and which are imparted to the first two initiations by the Bodhisattva. So let's just say everything, all revelations are sequential and are prepared by foregoing revelations. Revs, that would be a good one to put in. Yes, revelations. All right. I hope this typing is not too loud. Sort of the best I can do in this makeshift method of speaking to you. And, well, for the moment, it's the best I can do. Now, another paragraph. The polarization shifts during the fifth period, the period of the path of initiation, you know, what has gone before, I suppose. Hall of Ignorance, then normal life, then the period of aspirant, disciple, and then the initiate. Maybe that would be five, putting the path of initiation on the fifth, as the fifth of these periods. And remember how important is the fifth ray in the whole process of initiation. So the polarization shifts during the fifth period, the period of the path of initiation, entirely from the personality to the ego. And I would just want to say, you know, this is an eventual shift. Until at the close of that period, liberation is complete. You remember the fixed cross and how we deal with liberation in Aquarius, but Aquarius can also be related to the cardinal cross and the liberation of the fifth initiation. Liberation is complete. And the man is set free. And we must understand that the law of freedom from Sirius would be closely related to the planet Uranus, yes, and also to the first ray of Uranus and to the fifth initiation, which is the entered apprentice initiation as far as Sirius is concerned. So when we obligate ourselves to the logos of Sirius at the fifth initiation, it's a kind of liberation from earlier bondage, but it's a new type of commitment to a still greater logos. Even the causal body is known as a limitation, and the emancipation is complete. And so let's just say that individuality, Indy. Oh, individuality is a limitation. Okay. So even the causal body is known as a limitation, and the emancipation is completed. The polarization then shifts into the triad. And the shifting beginning at the third initiation, and let's just say the focus then is in the higher mind or the abstract mind, which is the lowest level of the spiritual triad. All right, the physical permanent atom goes and the polarization becomes higher mental. That's interesting. From the physical permanent atom to the higher mental atom. That's one way of looking at the relationship between the triad and the personality. Let's see if I can find this thing here. See, here it is, from the physical permanent atom to the monastic permanent atom, from the astral permanent atom to the Buddhic permanent atom, and from the mental unit all the way to the atomic permanent atom. But from another perspective, there is also a reflection going on, not just a superimposition, but a reflection where the atmic permanent atoms related to the physical, and again the buddhic to the astral, and the mental unit to the monastic permanent atoms. So both by superimposition, it's kind of a correspondence, and then by reflection, these different relationships are worked out. So the physical permanent atom goes, and the polarization becomes higher mental. Another way of looking at that is that we lose our physical body, you know, physical etheric body at the fourth initiation. The emotional permanent atom goes, and the polarization becomes intuitional. And I guess what we might say, this is the fourth initiation. The mental unit goes, and the polarization becomes spiritual or atmic. So this is a different point of view about these shifts. The man then becomes a master of wisdom, and is the symbolic age, is of the symbolic age of 42, the point of perfected maturity in the solar system. Now, that's interesting. Sometimes I've thought about the master as being of the symbolic age of 35, and the Chohan of the symbolic age of 42, and the Chohan of the seventh degree, like the Christ of the symbolic age of 49. There's some mathematical reasons for saying that when you check the charts of the planes. But this is interesting. I'm pondering on this. So, polarization shifts higher into the triad, and the shifting begins at the third initiation. But the physical permanent atom does not necessarily disappear at the third initiation. This disappearance, let's put it like this, disappearance is more, is found at the fourth initiation, and also, in a way, the disappearance of the mental unit. But this is a little different point of view, with the mental unit becoming atmic. Well, after all, the atmic plane is a plane of mentality in a higher and larger sense. After all, it's the third subplane down of the cosmic physical plane, so hence the mentality. Always the center relationship of buddhic and astral remains the same, whether we're talking about sort of a correspondential superimposition or whether we're talking about a reflection where the highest relates to the lowest and the lowest relates to the highest of the low. So both operate simultaneously, really. The physical permanent atom goes, and the polarization becomes higher mental. Now you can, you know, have your higher mental polarization without your physical permanent atom being destroyed, and hence your physical body and etheric body being destroyed. You can maintain that. The emotional permanent atom goes, and the polarization becomes intuitional. Maybe the question arises, what does it mean, goes? Does it mean it just disappears, or that it yields its power to a higher permanent atom while remaining in incarnation? However, you know, real intuitional polarization doesn't occur till after the fourth initiation, and real atmic polarization doesn't occur until the fifth initiation. So there are a few little complexities to work out here, and it looks like when the mental unit, see, the mental unit in a way has already been destroyed, has it not? It's been absorbed into the monastic permanent atom, and the astral permanent atom has been absorbed into the buddhic permanent atom, and the physical permanent atom, from another angle, has been absorbed into the atmic permanent atom, and all of that when the causal body is destroyed. So let's just say that this paragraph is not as simple as it may look at face value, because we're dealing with two different kinds of relationships. One is a reflection, where the high and the low are relating, and the other is a kind of correspondence where it goes high to high, middle to middle, and low to low. Okay, anyway, but the master is 42 years old from the point of perfected maturity of the solar system. An old friend of mine used to say that to become 42, one needs fortitudes. And maybe we can begin to master our personal life on a lower turn of the spiral when we reach the age of 42. At least we're somehow more related to the love energy by that time, because 6 times 7 is 42, and we're dealing then with the monad, and the monad is on a plane of love from a certain perspective, because it's the second plane, you know, and Virgo, ruling the monadic plane, is also in this solar system anyway, or as we receive energy in this solar system, giving us the second and the sixth ray. All right, now it looks like we're changing, you know, different books as we go along. None of it is easy. It's all a correlational study, and one has to keep one's correlations from running away with one, because it's how these correlations can be applied, which is, in the last analysis, that which is of importance. So this is from Telepathy and the Etheric Vehicle. True capacity to invoke and evoke within initiate ranks is based upon a mysterious development impossible before the time of the third initiation of the esoteric sense. It's like, let's just say, triangle in the head must be at least formed and functioning. It's so important there as well when we come to the dispelling radiance of the esoteric healer that triangle in the head be at least operative, if not as fully functional and powerful as it will be at the fourth and fifth initiation. It is possible, of course, you know, to keep a semblance of the physical vehicle at the fourth initiation and maybe even at the fifth initiation, although often a Maya Varupa is used, and it would, you know, through a Maya Varupa, you can do anything that you can do in the normal personality mechanism. The active use of the esoteric sense in the occult training offered to aspirants, disciples, and initiates of lesser degree produces certain changes within the brain. So it's another way of saying the intuition produces certain changes within the brain, because the esoteric sense and the intuition really are inseparable, with corresponding changes within the buddhic vehicle. Yes, okay. So, let's see, even in early days, even before the esoteric sense is complete, changes within the buddhic vehicle, let's see, BV, buddhic vehicle, are occurring. Okay. With corresponding changes within the Buddhic vehicle may not be totally correlated or organized or coordinated, maybe that's the word, until after the third degree, but already at the time of the second degree, there's the correspondence there from astral to Buddhic, a movement towards the coordination of the Buddhic vehicle is occurring, and remember how strong Neptune and Jupiter are in relation to Buddhi and how important they are at the second initiation. Okay, corresponding changes within the Buddhic vehicle. These changes enable one at will, after the third initiation of transfiguration, to contact the being life or the monadic point of contact with whom he will be increasingly affiliated. He kind of, in a way, personifies the monadic point of contact, or the member of the hierarchy whom he may desire to consult. It can be perhaps a number of them. This is very interesting. Let's just say that intuition becomes very important after the third degree. So, and let's say also the monadic plane has a correspondence to the Buddhic plane and to the astral plane. Let's see, astral plane, AP, astral plane. Okay, so you know the monadic plane is two from the top, astral plane two from the bottom. Monadic plane six from the bottom, astral plane six from the top. The intuitional plane or Buddhic plane is ruled by Jupiter and Neptune, and Jupiter and Neptune also have a very high correspondence or connection with the monadic plane. Interestingly, Jupiter, the hierarchical ruler, Neptune, one of the esoteric rulers of the veiling moon in Virgo ruling at this time the monadic plane. So there are a lot of possible lines of transmission there that connect planes two, four, and six, and Neptune is active on all of them. Neptune astral, Neptune Buddhic, and Neptune is a major ruler of Pisces, and Pisces being, along with Virgo, a major ruler of the monadic plane, that going forth, I leave the Father's home, that's the monadic plane, and returning save, how does it go? Turning back, I save. So we can make through the Buddhic plane, Buddhic vehicle, we can contact the monadic plane. And that maybe that's one of the reasons why at the third initiation, when the focus really shifts towards Buddhi and cultivating the intuition, we are able, in fact, to bring in the power of the monad in a more conscious way for the first time. Okay, anyway, it does not involve the use of speech or words, but is simply a technical method whereby an initiate within the hierarchy or en rapport with Shambhala, I guess with en rapport with his monad, can make his presence felt and certain ideas can be presented by him. Now, can make his presence felt. The monad is the presence, so that's kind of interesting. It's like make his monad felt, or his monadic radiation felt. How does it go? No express reveal. Reveal the monad at the third initiation. And certain ideas can be presented by him. Upon this, I will not further enlarge, but it's my impression, I say anyway, my impression that these ideas relate to oneness and to synthesis, the law of synthesis. There's a certain first ray quality that comes in as well at the third initiation because the monad is for the first time really active. When you look at these paragraphs, they run so deep. If we're just careless in our reading, we'll just read things, jump over them, and saying, "Oh yeah, oh yeah." But if we really look at the correlations carefully, we can see a whole network of relationships that might not have been obvious at first. So let's just say third initiation changes occur within the Buddhic vehicle all along the way, even at the, well, Buddhi becomes more active within the causal body even at the first initiation, and the monad, unsuspected to the personality, makes his presence felt within the soul body at the first initiation. So Buddhi and the monad are active behind the scenes, even at the initiations of the threshold. In a way, we're being led into higher realizations unbeknownst to ourselves, even at that early time. Okay, let's go on. And it's just the cosmic fire. It looks like there was only one reference to the third initiation there. I do have a fuller kind of compilation, but as I was making these for the Blue Rose Sisters and Shiva Brothers, you know, they do go together there. It's kind of a bridge from the Southern Indian school into the Trans-Himalayan school. It's Hinduism and Buddhism together. So I was making these because I failed in a recording. Somehow there was no sound, just a nice silent movie. But I begin to think that this will be of use to others, and so I'm going to ask Brett to make them available. And as I said, it is my hope that I'll be able to do this with a lot of initiatory compilations. I mean, the person who's been really careful about this is Robert Borrell, with his huge compilation on the initiations and a number of videos and programs which present the ideas. My method is different. I kind of discuss in a ramifying way what DK has presented, and I try to make correlations which will help people close up the network of relationships and see it all as one whole. And anyway, that's my purpose, if I can. Okay, eventually, after the two fires of matter and the fire of mind have begun to blend, we're at the shoulder center, a slow and gradual process. The web itself, we're talking about etheric webs that are protective, the web itself is destroyed, and by the time the third initiation is reached, the man should have continuity of consciousness. Of what kind of consciousness? Continuity of inner personality consciousness, and continuity of soul presence, or the consciousness of soul presence. This is so unless for certain work and for certain specific ends, the man consciously and willingly, you know, second aspect, first aspect, forgoes the burning of the web, a thing which can be brought about by the conscious action of the will. I mean, sometimes we close off certain connections in order to concentrate more fully on lesser connections, which have to be at last accomplished. Okay, well, I think that's pretty clear. You know, there's a lot that contributes. Well, I want to say this, that the etheric webs contribute to what I have called dimensional ceiling, meaning that when you're in one of the lower dimensions of consciousness, if the etheric webs exist, you don't contain, while in those lower realms of consciousness, the awareness of the higher realms, because the etheric webs prevent the vibrations of the higher realms from penetrating the particular level of vibration where you find yourself. But as the burning occurs, then we have simultaneous multidimensional consciousness. This is what will develop. Simultaneous multidimensional consciousness. Okay. And, you know, that's what we're working for, so we can be aware on a number of different levels at the same time. Now, maybe the only being that can be aware on all universal levels simultaneously is the universal logos. And but, you know, that would be sheer speculation. There's always a ring passing out of consciousness, even for very, very high beings. We cannot imagine that our planetary logos has universal consciousness, if we use universal in the more absolute sense, meaning the entire universe, you know, not just the solar system, which sometimes is called a universe. By the time the third initiation is taken, the inner circle of petals is opened, and the full-blown lotus in all its beauty can be seen. But I just want to say this, opened, yes, but fully burst open, no. Well, last time I said that, I was contradicted immediately later. But he does tell us as the fourth initiation approaches, and when we're ready to take that, that the inner group of petals bursts open and reveals the jewel in the lotus. And of course, that jewel is interesting because if you think about Vulcan, it rules all jewels in a way. And one of the higher rays of Vulcan may very well be the fourth ray, you know, with its focus upon beauty of form. So the fourth initiation, fourth ray, the bursting of the synthesis petals open to reveal this great jewel, which in a way is the presence of the monad on the higher mental plane. Odike gets more specific about it. He says, sort of between the higher mental plane and the Buddhic plane, whatever that may mean, between. But of course, with the number four, it is the in-between ray. And there is the fourth plane of Buddhi, which has to be reckoned with. The planets are so interesting because they have rays other than the rays with which we have been normally familiar. I mean, you know, so many of us think of Uranus as the seventh ray planet of the violet flame. Well, it is, but it's also the home of the planetary logos of the first ray. That first ray is extremely important in Uranus and will be increasingly so as the solar system goes on. And really the only other first ray planet is monadically considered, I think, is the Earth, although, you know, Mars, well, when we look at monadic rays as they might apply to the logoic plane and not the monadic plane, the higher of the monadic, the higher of the monadic rays, then we will have to consider yet still more rays than we had normally considered. We have the soul ray, and the soul subray. We have the triadal subray and the major triadal ray, which is a reflection of a monadic ray. I'm not sure which. We have the monadic ray, which is the monadic subray, and the final highest of the monadic rays, which I think pertains to the logoic plane. So the study of the rays from a high perspective is very intricate and interesting, but probably we don't in our normal personality life bring through much of that kind of energy, and so maybe it's not so very relevant to us at this time. Okay, well, you know, pretty soon, you know, taking my chances and making my guess, if I want to keep these programs around an hour, and having begun in such a way that I didn't have my chronometer going here, I'll be wrapping up program number three here. Okay, at the third initiation, the moon and Mars struggle to assume ascendancy, and there is the battleground. Each wants to be dominant. Hence, at the great transfiguration, the body is transfigured as the indication of triumph. But it's not really the moon, is it? It's not really the moon. The moon is really a dead planet relating to the previous third chain of our planetary logos. The logos of our planetary scheme, and what we're really looking at, as far as I'm concerned, we are really looking at Vulcan. So this is the instance in which Vulcan, you know, the ruler of all hard things under compression, kills Abel, who is the shepherd, and the shepherd tends his sheep, and the sheep belong to Aries, you know, and to Mars. So it's the triumph of the moon veiling Vulcan over Mars. Triumph of the moon veiling Vulcan over Mars. Now, Vulcan is a sacred planet very close to the sun. It may not be the inmost planet. I've heard speculations of a still more inner planet called Adonis. This is sort of at the forefront of speculative astrology, but let's just say that of the planets we know of, Vulcan is the innermost and has many solar qualities and will qualities. So when you're comparing will with desire, so compare will with desire, we are comparing Vulcan with Mars. And let's just say desire for things of the personality are overcome at the third degree. And they should be really overcome quite a bit, even at the second degree, where will begins to show itself, I would say strongly, but we don't have that domination of will over desire until the third degree. And even then, sometimes the sacrificial will is not complete, as in the story of the rich young man who couldn't quite get himself to follow the Christ and then went sadly away, as the story goes. All right, moving on a little bit here. This is from Esoteric Psychology 2. These three words, individualization, initiation, and identification, what can we call it? Individualization, Leo, Gemini, initiation, Capricorn in general, and identification, Pisces in general. These three words, individualization, initiation, identification, cover the whole process of man's career from the time he emerges into the human kingdom. That's that very strong kind of, Gemini, Cancer, Leo emergence into the human kingdom until till he passes out of it at the third initiation. Now, is he really? From one perspective, yes, but is man really passing out of the human kingdom at the third degree? Because when is a man no longer a man? When has he actually entered fully the kingdom of souls? Well, in one respect, he's entering the kingdom of souls while still a human being at the first initiation. And from another respect, he's still a human being at the third initiation, but is quite well established in the kingdom of souls. And they are no longer men as are the masters, says the Tibetan in the sixth rule of rays and initiations. And so even at the fifth degree, a master is standing at the apex of the human kingdom while being strongly in the kingdom of souls. Maybe that's another apex. Anyway, by the time he's a monad, they are no longer men, as are the masters. The masters are men and therefore would be related to the human kingdom, but they become planetary lives at the sixth degree. So, DK gives us different perspectives in different places, and we simply have to learn how to look at all those together and see no contradiction, because the contradiction is in the limitations of our own mind. So anyway, at the third initiation, he's functioning freely. He's really a member of the ashram, freely in the fifth kingdom, the kingdom of God. Let's just call not just a peripheral member of the ashram, but solidly established in the ashram. Okay, well, we're moving towards that, as we meditate, study, and serve. We are moving along that line, and success will be ours, inevitably, if we just follow the rules and drop our selfishness. By that time, he has learned that consciousness is free and unlimited. Well, again, within reason, and can function in form or out of form according to the behest of the soul, or as the plan can best be served. Well, where is he functioning? Within the causal body? Within the causal body, yes, and also upon the subtle planes. The soul is then in no way conditioned by form. I mean, in other words, the soul will always win eventually at this point. Soul will always win, but there can still be lapses, but none that will ultimately compromise the spiritual work. Just as man expresses himself in what is called three-dimensional living, so by the time he takes the third initiation, he can function actively and consciously in four dimensions. Now, you know, what are we counting here? What are we counting? Let's just say dense physical. Dense physical body, etheric body, astral body, and mental body, with the higher mental plane considered as the fifth or the fourth, if we count, the etheric physical body as one. Okay, etheric physical body. Let's make that. That's one that I definitely should have. Etheric physical body. Etheric physical body. Yeah. Oop, but I better spell it correctly or it'll come back to haunt me. There we go. Etheric physical body. Anyway, and in the final stages of the path of initiation, he becomes fifth, active fifth dimensionally. Now, when we're talking about these particular dimensions, looks like he, DK, is talking about planes. So after the third initiation, the Buddhic plane is opening up. And this is fourth dimensional. So there are different ways to count things, you know, not to become bewildered by these different methods of counting. It's just all the angle of perception that is what counts. Now, I'll tell you what, I'm going to take a little roll of the dice here, and I'm just going to say that this is the end of commentary on the third initiation for the Blue Rose Sisterhood and others. And we'll continue with this compilation when it next becomes possible. I have no idea, you know, how close I am right now to the hour-long program that I would want to send to you, probably because it's more convenient, you know, for your listening, and maybe doesn't wear me out so much. But as you can see, you know, we're looking at DK's words in a fairly meticulous manner. We're making correlations to other things that are not immediately mentioned in the text in the attempt to use Mercury to draw together a web of relationships, which eventually becomes so intertwined that it merges with the perception of a oneness. So in a way, we're moving from Mercury to Jupiter. Mercury, the many correlations, and Jupiter, the inclusiveness of the whole. Where all the many correlations are seen as one, and eventually this gives us a realization that the whole can be seen as one while not negating perception of all the various correlations which go to make that whole. So we'll work more on this as we go along. There's still quite a bit to go, and this is an abbreviated compilation of the fourth initiation. I mean, a third initiation. I'll try to do them all, you know, try to do them all at some point so that the initiations can be placed in a broader context for our appreciation of how they really fit within the overall development of the planet and even of the solar system. All right, hopefully the sound took on this, and hopefully all is well, and we'll be seeing you before long. All the best to everybody. Ciao. Bye-bye.